Moncrief on News Talk. From the heinous to the ridiculous. This is Moncrief's Murder Club.
Time for Moncrief's Murder Club, where Cassie Delaney guides us through some strange and unexplained cases. And today it's three mysterious deaths with elements in common. Good afternoon, Cassie.
Good afternoon, Sean. I like that little jingle. That's so official.
You get a sting. So that's a, you know, that's a good sign.
Great.
That means people like you if
you
get a sting.
I'm here to stay.
That's what it means. You kind of wonder about these cases before we go into them, whether there was an element of copycatting to it.
This is what I would think. So these are the options. There either is a copycat thing going on, or it's part of a bigger, broader part of society that we do not know about, because these are three cases decades apart, all over the world, that have very similar signatures that have happened in them.
Okay, so tell us first about the Somerton case, the Somerton Man.
Very, very popular, very well-known mystery. The Somerton Man case is one of the most famous unidentified deaths in the world. It's kind of lasted for one very simple reason. So almost every clue feels like it should point investigators towards an answer, but in every sort of element of this case, it just gets more and more confusing. So we're going to go right back into 1948 in Australia. In December, the body of an unknown man was found on Somerton Beach near Adelaide in Australia. He's really neatly dressed. He's propped against a seawall. It's like he had simply sat down and passed away. So no obvious signs of distress. No one had seen anything dramatic nearby. And at first glance, it didn't look like a murder at all. Just like a man who kind of sat down and fallen asleep. But as the police began to examine the body, they found more and more mysterious circumstances. He had no identification on him, which is very telling. The labels had been removed from his clothes, cut off. So this is all kind of identifying features of where he might have come from or being removed. This is the thing. It's one thing to be like unidentifiable, but to be made deliberately unidentifiable just seems super strange. Then came the suitcase. So investigators later found a brown suitcase in the cloakroom at an Adelaide railway station, believed to belong to the dead man. So it had been checked in the day before the body was discovered. Like the labels on his clothes at the time of his death, all the labels on the clothes in the suitcase had been removed. Inside were slippers, toiletries, some clothes, tools, a collection of just ordinary possessions that you would expect someone to have in a suitcase. Some of the items had the name T. Keane on them, or Keane, but they were never able to connect that name with anybody around or anybody they could find. So every clue was just like this kind of embellishment to flourish on the case, but again, super, super confusing. So one of the biggest things about this case, though, was some of the possessions found on the body at the time. In his pocket was a small piece of paper with the words Tamman Shud on it, which means ended or finished, which is a line from a poem. And the words were linked to a copy of the poem found in a nearby car, which also in the car had a phone, a phone number and a coded message. So this is really kind of mad stuff.
And that piece of paper, that's from the Rubaiyat and Momar
Khan. Yeah, that's it. So that was found on him. But again, just a really, such a weird message to have just torn on one piece of paper in your pocket when you're found, you know, deceased on a beach. So in recent years, DNA work has strongly suggested that the man was Carl Charles Webb, who was a Melbourne electrical engineer. But that doesn't really solve the mystery in any way, because it hasn't answered any questions as to who he was, why he was there, why he was in Adelaide, why the labels were removed, why the suitcase was checked in nearby. So there's still just so many mysteries around this case.
Did they ever discover what the cause of death was, even?
So they suspect that it was poison, but it didn't look, they couldn't find an obvious type of poison on him. So they didn't even know whether he died of natural causes or whether he had been deliberately killed. It seems likely, given the circumstances, that it was a murder, but they haven't found the specific type of poison that was in his system.
But if he was murdered, why would you check his bag in with all the labels removed? Why didn't you just set fire to it?
It's like he checked in the bag and then went and got murdered and never came back to collect it, which is a theme in these stories.
Yeah, and the coded message in the car, were they ever able to crack that?
It's been tried to be decoded many, many times, but I don't think they've ever come up with anything definitive to what that message could have meant.
And the phone number never led them to anything either.
No, nothing has led them anywhere. It's only DNA work and kind of ancestry work that has led them to that name, Charles Webb, but they still don't know who he was or what he was doing there. I mean, an electrical engineer to die in those circumstances seems very, very suspicious.
Very suspicious. Right. OK, so keep in mind that's 1948. We go forward in time now to 1970s.
Yes. So 12 years in the future. And we're going from Australia to Norway with a very similar case. This is the Isdal woman. And this one is a little bit, there's a couple of different differentiations between this one. So this woman, the body was found with severe burns as well. So there's a definitive kind of cause of death here. A remote valley outside Bergen, known locally as the Death Valley, which is ominous to begin with. And the badly burned body of an unidentified woman is discovered. Again, suitcases discovered at a nearby railway station. And in that suitcase are some aliases, some wigs, some coded notes. And once again, all of the labels removed from the clothes. So again, this kind of idea that it's not just about being unidentifiable, it's like doing it with, you know, with intention so that people cannot discover who they are afterwards. This body was found on the 29th of November in a hiking area outside Bergen, and she'd been badly burned. Around her body at the time were bottles, a purse, an umbrella, jewellery and rubber boots. So again, did not look like a straightforward accident. That autopsy found sleeping tablets in her system and concluded that she died from a combination of poisoning and carbon monoxide inhalation, suggesting that she was alive when she'd kind of been involved in a fire.
Oh, or somebody slept through the sleeping pills.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So very, very disturbing. Then 3 days later, they found two suitcases at the railway station that appeared to belong to her. Inside were the clothes, wigs, shoes, cosmetics, maps, money from different countries, which I think is really telling here, and a notebook containing what looked like coded entries again, but not the same code as the code in the Somerton map.
Yeah.
So another coded entries. Again, identifying marks from all those possessions had been removed with intention. So witnesses who saw her in the days leading up to her death remembered her as like an elegant, guarded, well-dressed and seemingly difficult to place. So some people said that she seemed German. Others said that she seemed Finnish or French. And she seemed to have moved through hotels and cities, kind of taking on these different personalities and different aliases as she went on.
And were they able to trace where she stayed or?
Well, they have the kind of hotel check-ins and things like that, but it hasn't helped them identify who she was or who she might have been. Again, like that kind of idea of removing the labels and removing all the identifying marks from your possessions means you can't trace back to the origin. There's nothing to anchor these people in any sort of any city or anything worldly. And that's what I think makes it so, so strange. So naturally your mind goes to espionage.
Yes,
it makes
must.
It so
yeah.
much more
Given
exciting.
Even the era it was, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we're in the kind of Cold War. Bergen had NATO significance at the time. The woman had moved across borders using false identities and left behind a trail that looked superficially like tradecraft. So people have wondered whether she was a spy, a courier or an informant, or simply a woman who was trying to escape and lead a different kind of life. It could have been a case where all of these actions seem political, but it's someone just fleeing and trying to get to a better place. But then why all so many different identities, and why the removal of all identifying features? She was definitely fleeing from something.
Yeah. Trying to keep her identity a secret. But it would imply, though, her end wasn't voluntary.
No, I don't think hers
so
was.
So there was another person involved there.
Definitely, definitely. And her identity has never been resolved. There's not been any name attached to her at all. So this one still remains a mystery at large, much like the Somerton man. Even though we have kind of a name based on DNA evidence, that it doesn't close. It doesn't close the case, doesn't give us any answers at all.
So the third case, we're back in Ireland now, and it's 2009.
Yeah, so we're now like nearly 40 years again in the future. We've gone from Australia to Norway to Sligo. You don't expect you'd find many people doing espionage and spying in Sligo, but here we are. And this is a well-known case of Peter Bergman. So this is a modern interpretation of these previous crimes. The difference here is that we have a lot of CCTV footage of Peter Bergen's final moments because it's only 2009. So a man checks in to the Sligo City Hotel, pays in cash and gave an address in Vienna that was later proven to be made up. And over the next few days, CCTV captures him moving around the town, carrying a purple plastic bag. I don't know if you've ever seen the footage of this. It's quite unnerving. He walks around and puts stuff from the plastic bag into bins around the city as if he's trying to dispose of his last worldly possessions. He would leave with a full bag from the hotel and return with it empty. So this is the idea. The investigators kind of had that theory that he was disposing of his belongings in different locations so that they could never be traced and drawn back together. Then on the 16th of June, his body was found on Ross's Point Beach. No clear evidence of an assault, much like Somerton Man. And the postmortem later found that he actually had advanced cancer and bone tumours, suggesting that he knew that he was near the end of his life and that he had been seriously ill. There was no water in his lungs. And though his body was found on the shore, he did not appear to have drowned in any kind of typical ordinary sense. The medical findings in this autopsy were complicated by the fact that he had been so sick. So again, as with Somerton Man and the Isdale Woman, the labels had been removed from his clothes. All of them. It's just so weird. It's such a minor detail, but like turns the whole thing from a kind of normal murder case into something super dramatic. And the connections between them all, I think, is just absolutely fascinating. So he was traveling under a false name, paying in cash, disposing of his possessions and removing every identifying label from his clothes suggests once again that there was some intention here at the end of his life. So it's particularly striking because I think we're used to thinking that if you have CCTV footage and in this model, it'd be much easier to solve a crime. You can understand why, like 1948, we didn't get very many answers. But you would think you'd be able to identify someone in Ireland in 2009. But it never has. He's never been identified. We've never known anything more of Peter Bergman and who he actually is.
OK, so Peter Bergman was the name he used to sign into the hotel. That's all there is.
That's it. No history, nothing identifiable. Again, no ID on him, no passport, nothing.
Because, and the cause of death, he was very sick anyway.
Yeah, so the autopsy here was kind of confusing. So he was sick and he did have a lot of underlying conditions, but he was found kind of on a beach, no obvious signs of assault. So potentially poison. Maybe again.
But they don't know.
They don't know. We've no answers.
Because you would have thought in 2009, removing the tabs and the clothes, so, you know, he didn't get it in Dunn's stores or whatever. Yeah. But I thought that forensic medicine would be able to say this fibre comes from such a place and they could track all that down.
Maybe that's Sligo as well. You just expect to look at something and be like, pennies, hon. Like, you should be able to identify things you think a lot easier then. But no, still no answers. It's fascinating, isn't it? Like, do you think they're connected? Do you think there's some sort of secret society of spies that we don't know about that are being taken out all over the world?
They may well have read about the other cases. Because you could see in the 1971 and the 1946 one that they go, ooh, yeah, that's a good way.
Yeah.
Hiding my identity.
But again, I mean, there's footage of Peter Bergman in Sligo, which I think is super interesting because we would assume that someone would see it and be able to identify them. But no, nothing.
But also the curious thing is in the first case, in the Australian case, in Somerton Man, were the tabs removed by him to keep his identity shrouded? Where it kind of the second case, or by somebody who killed him, whereas in the second case, it would kind of... It sounds like that she had taken these, she'd been quite deliberate about keeping her identity hidden because of all the passports.
I would imagine that it was them. It just goes back to what you were saying there. If it was somebody else doing it, why would they leave the suitcases to begin with? Unless they're red herrings and trying to be confusing and point to espionage.
Yeah. Just shows you, truth is often stranger than fiction. Cassie, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Cassie Delaney there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.